Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesfinell, and I'm your host. On today's program, the Iraq War is over, the economy is going strong, and which one of these statements is true? Well, the only one that's true is actually John Anderson's in the studio with us. To talk about these subjects and more, you do want to stay tuned. Well, John, you made it up here.
Yeah, this is my first time ever in the wonderfully eclectic and well-stocked studios of WNUR. This is great. This totally beats calling in and over Skype. Totally. With more than a stick.
And let me just say something about stick, maybe WNUR. A log. Just voted as the best college radio station in Chicago by New City, which is a arts weekly newspaper. Full of listings.
Sound of two hands clapping.
Voted not just by the staff of New City, which I think includes one chimpanzee, but also by the readers of New City.
Which may also include
a chimpanzee or two, right. Or other lower mammals as right. Well, a couple simians.
So basically when it comes to warm-blooded living creatures that listen to the radio and they like college radio, WNUR is the place to be in Chicago.
And so for those of you who are listening on WFT or out there in Moscow, Idaho, or out in the wilds of Canada, you can get them at WNUR.org. But WNUR here at Northwestern University is where Media Geek is now produced.
Yeah, this is great.
And John made the trek up on the Amtrak from Champaign-Urbana up here to Chicago and Evanston.
To the big city.
In the studio.
Yeah, yeah.
John, you, of course, are the proprietor of DIYmedia.net.
Still, yeah.
A man who has had a storied career in radio journalism on both sides of the coin.
You might say that, yeah, commercial and non-commercial.
And you keep a watch on many things having to do with the airwaves, including digital radio, pirate radio, and other spectrum usages.
Yeah, I guess I can say that now. Now that the 5-year statute of limitations is out. Hey, FCC, in case you might be listening over there at the office by O'Hare, I was a radio pirate 5 years ago, and I'm not anymore. And if you check my website out pretty soon, I'm going to have the entire archived audio air check of this radio station on the air.
Now, wait a second. That's kind of that's a bomb you're dropping here. I didn't realize that you're going to be making news here.
Yeah, I just want to let you know that the pirate radio station that I used to run in Madison, Wisconsin. It was called System P. It broadcast on 87.9 FM, and I taped pretty much every episode of the show that we did. And I've been slowly digitizing them, and I ended doing pirate radio in 2004. So next year, 2009, will be the end of the statute of limitations, and that's when I will publish everything, and then I can basically give two big electronic middle fingers to the FCC and say, look what you guys missed. Just an hour and a half up the road.
Wow. Well, yeah. That'll have to be the whole topic of a show there.
It's worth, I mean, you know, a lot of people talk about pirate radio as some sort of monolithic creature, and we all know that it's not. People do radio stations for different reasons, and some stations are set up differently than others. And the station that I ran was kind of a one-off operation. It was just me and friends, and we took the station around to various people's homes and held, I guess, what you would call radio parties in the vein of Tetsuo Kogawa, a famous micro radio pioneer from Japan in the 1970s. And a lot of, you know, politically motivated free radio broadcasters don't like stations like mine because they call them vanity stations. You're just running them, you know, hit and miss guerrilla style. You obviously are not really committed to the cause. Well, you know, I was breaking the law every time I flipped a switch, so I don't think it's your place to tell me what I can and cannot do or say on the air. And we're all in this war, and it's a war together. You know, at least one station will be represented and archived in that way. And, yeah, so there's, I guess that's a bombshell for your show.
Huh? That's a bombshell. Well, speaking of pirate radio as well, I've read that KBFR
is
Boulder
back
Free
on
radio.
The air. Yes.
This is a station in Boulder, Colorado, another college town about 45 minutes west of Denver, Colorado, mm-hmm. up in the hills, in the foothills there. And in a previous incarnation, run by a man known only as Monk,
mm-hmm.
played a pretty active game of cat and mouse with the Denver FCC office for several years.
Yep.
When did they finally go off the air? When did Monk finally shut it all down?
You know, I don't remember the exact time. I want to say it was sometime like 2005 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was during the second Bush administration. And effectively what the FCC did is they uncovered Monk's real identity.
January 2005.
Okay. They sent Monk a letter basically saying, we know who you are and we can pin all of this on you. And they did it in a nice way. They sent him a letter of inquiry as opposed to a warning or a fine or you know, anything like that. And he said, well, my gig is up and I'm done. So the station's been dormant for a while, and now there's a new crew who's taken it over and have extended the decentralized transmission model that Monk had started when KBFR was originally on the air. What they would do is they would have the transmitter located at any place where there's a broadband connection. And most often this is at people's homes or businesses, and they would move the transmitter there, and they would use that broadband connection to webcast to the transmission site. So when the FCC showed up, they only tracked the transmitter, but they could never find the studio because the studio could be wherever there was an internet connection. Mm-hmm. And so the person who would get dimed or busted for having the transmitter would say, oh, I'm sorry, you know, I didn't realize this was legal, I'll turn it off immediately. They'd turn it off, and then they would call the next person on the list and say, yo, you need to pick the gear up and set it up. This new crew is using the same technology in that they're webcasting from a decentralized studio space, but apparently they have already pre-positioned more than a dozen transmitters throughout
really?
The county.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of planning and forethought.
I think
that's
Monk,
like a hub and spoke system.
I think even though Monk is not involved personally in this, mm-hmm. I think he might have thrown some cash their way because without giving too much away about Monk, he is a middle-aged senior corporate executive with venture capital and new media technologies. So he's not, you know, your poor dumpster diving anarchist squat lover, mm-hmm. right? This is a guy who actually wanted to go on the air legally, and he bought all the equipment to go on the air legally under the original FCC low power FM rules. And when Congress trumped those and made it impossible for an LPFM station to set up in Boulder, Monk basically said, you know, F this, and we're going to do it anyway. And that's how Boulder Free Radio got started. This was a guy who was not a radical by any stretch of the imagination, you know, and what had happened with the FCC and Congress and the whole LPFM saga radicalized him. That's what started KBFR. Then he got dimed and the station's been dormant. Now it's back, and it sounds like it's going to be around for a while.
And on his own blog, which is freemedia.blogspot.com, Monk says that he's moved out of town and makes a few comments about this particular station. Mostly makes comments about a story that ran in the Boulder Weekly,
mm-hmm.
I think it was actually not in the Boulder Weekly. I think it was in the Daily Camera, which is the
college paper.
The college paper there for Colorado University. And takes the reporter to task because he called the FCC for comment and then called the local Clear Channel station for comment. And apparently neither the FCC nor the Clear Channel station were aware the station was on the air at that point.
Whoops. Yeah. Well, that's the double-edged sword when it comes to running yeah. a pirate radio station, is you have to balance publicity with longevity. And I don't know why whoever is running KBFR now agreed to do the interview. But they say in this article that mm-hmm. you reference, he says, you know, this new person whose name I can't remember, it's an alias, at the end of the article says, you know, it's really only a matter of time. It's a question of when, but not if the FCC shows up.
Right,
so
if,
they
if
already
they're
going to
run a 24/7 operation, and they're going to be pretty out there.
But they're set up to resist. You know, they've mm-hmm. got redundancy up the wazoo, and that's really impressive, and it's nice to see them back on the air.
Well, and that kind of segues us a little bit, because, I mean, one of the big reasons that pirate radio exists in the U.S., has been because of the inability, really, to get new stations on the air in most major metroplexes. And because even with the invent of low-power FM, still cities like Chicago, for instance, there's no space left. And a few weeks back, we had folks from the Chicago Independent Radio Project.
Chirp. Yeah, I heard. Yeah. I listened to that on your website, which is at radio.mediageek.net, for
Thank
those
you.
Of you who are wanting to catch it later.
And they're hoping to get a low-power station, but they realize it requires a change in federal law, a law which was put in place at the behest and at due to the badgering of the National Association of Broadcasters.
And National Public Radio.
Let's
not forget that unholy alliance.
Counter to the FCC's own engineering reports, which said that they could put low-power FM stations at 10 and 100 watts, much closer to get on a dial, even get them into airspace here in cities like Chicago or LA or New York or other metroplexes. It's that kind of inaccessibility of the airwaves, despite the fact that the technology itself is inexpensive and easy to use, that motivated the modern micro-power movement in the U.S., and there's still people hanging on because even though there is internet broadcasting, the ability to reach a relatively large audience online is expensive. To buy all the bandwidth to start serving up hundreds or thousands of listeners at a time, but you can hit hundreds or thousands of listeners in New York, in L.A., in Chicago, or even a lot of smaller cities just by putting up a 100-watt or 50-watt station someplace real high.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, there is a new wave of micro-broadcaster, free radio broadcaster, that's developed after the LPFM service went into effect. You have the old guard, people who didn't feel that the FCC and especially Congress and the lobbyists, you know, didn't go far enough in opening access to the airwaves, and they're still on the air, like, you know, my good friends at Freak Radio Santa Cruz. You have, you know, the hit-and-run radio stations, which have always been out there and will continue to always be out there. And then you have an increased group of immigrants, typically from Caribbean countries like Haiti, the Caymans, Cuba, you know, people like that who come and they set up in neighborhoods where their people are, and they set up shops and businesses and things like that, and they want to advertise and they want to let people know that there's a community here and that it exists. And so they're the ones that have kind of taken the torch now, and it's not as explicitly politicized. You know, we're not going on the air to make a point about the FCC's regulations, but like as you said, it's out of necessity. We don't have access to the regular radio. There is no way for us to get a low-power FM radio station in a big city like New York or Miami. It's way too expensive right now to stream on the internet, so why don't we just go ahead and do this anyway? And that's where a lot of the newest pirate radio activity is happening. In fact, I haven't compiled all the statistics from the enforcement action database that I keep online since, I think, June, so I'm pretty far behind on that. But this year, we could see the pirate radio capital officially move from Miami to New York City and the surrounding metro area.
And a lot of that is due to immigration.
Due to immigration and due to stations that are being set up to serve specific, what I call ethnically identifiable communities that are not served by the mainstream media.
So it's neighborhood-based, very small regional in nature, and servable with just a dozen watts or so.
Right, yeah.
One of the things that people are hoping for from the Obama administration is the possibility that low-power FM will have the shackles taken off of it. I mean, a law has been floated every Congress.
The Local Community Radio
Act. Since 2000.
Yeah.
John McCain, a supporter of this law, often a co-sponsor in many cases, though he will not be our president. I think that's one thing people are hoping for from an Obama administration. It seems pretty clear that he would sign it if it can get through the House and it can get through the Senate.
And I doubt that this is something Republicans would filibuster on, but we have to keep in mind that we have to start the whole process all over again.
Yes.
There's still...
It starts with a new Congress. And
Congress
so a
is
new
coming
law.
Back, I think, what, next week? Or they came back this week, and they're in a lame duck session right now for about a month. And there is the possibility that this act could be passed, but Bush is still in office, and he's the one holding the veto pen. And so I doubt they're actually going to make a push on it right now, because too many interests, corporate interests, whatever, are working too hard to get the last blood out of the stone that they can get from these past 8 years, you know. So we're going to have to see action both at Congress to basically revise the law that governs the FCC and its administration of LPFM, and then More importantly, I think we're going to have to see who actually gets put on the FCC or who becomes part of Obama's tech policy team. And he's actually talked about putting together a technology czar and things like this. And I have to tell you that I'm not necessarily very impressed with some of his first picks and some of the people whose names have been floating around as potential FCC chair people or people like Blair Levin, who used to work for the FCC, then worked for Clear Channel, then worked for a law firm, which is one of the largest law firms founded by one of the most powerful FCC members ever, Richard Wiley. They still call him the sixth man on the FCC. Mm-hmm. And so he's drawing people from inside the Beltway, and granted they might have communication experience, and granted they might be associated with party politics, but I am afraid that this is the beginning of what we might possibly see as a centrist move of mm-hmm. Obama on policies more generally speaking.
Right.
And I hope that that doesn't happen. And I do subscribe to the philosophy that a lot of people said, a lot of people have been talking about, you know, now is the time to push. You know, he's only one man. Mm-hmm. We have a tripartite government, and administrative agencies are part of the executive branch, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done to restructure and refocus the energies, because the staff at these agencies, you have to remember that, you know, it's only the leaders that come in and out when the political winds change, but there are people that are, you know, career employees of the FCC, and they hate their jobs right now.
Right.
They held protests. They all dressed in black one day, you know, in May, I think, of this year, to protest the fact that the way they do their jobs has been so explicitly politicized. And, you know, it's one thing to bring in new leaders and possibly change the tenor, but you have to percolate that down to the staff, because that's where the work actually gets done. So I'm kind of leery of where Obama's going to go with the FCC. I mean, I didn't vote for him. I also didn't vote for McCain, mm-hmm. But I did vote, and so I don't have a dog in this hunt. It'll be nice to have a Democratic majority. I would love to see a Commissioner Adelstein, Jonathan Adelstein, Chairman Adelstein. That would be great. But all this stuff's going to play out probably in the spring.
Right. And nothing's going to play out before that. And unfortunately, there's a lot of other bigger fish in front of
the whole economic crisis,
the whole economic crisis,
global warming, and you know,
other issues sitting in front of this Congress. But that's often in those environments when some of these bills can slip through, because it's hard for the opposition to muster the strength while they're busy battling it out on other issues.
Yeah, and they got to pick which things are the ones they want to risk their butts on.
And if they feel like they can make it a feel-good issue, because make it a gimme in a lot of ways, so they feel like that the harm they're going to experience coming back from the National Association of Broadcasters or the broadcast lobby won't quite measure up to how much good they can play it at home. As you know, for the home team saying, well, we're sending a few extra local radio stations your way. So there's a chance, I think.
There will still be a need out there for people to continue to break the law, though, mm-hmm. and push the boundaries of what is legally acceptable as a process of expanding legal.
That's how radio was birthed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there was no license. Marconi did have no license.
Mm-hmm.
You are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Reisman-Ill, and I'm your host. Check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. It's home to the Media Geek blog, and Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can find the show. Subscribe to the podcast or listen right there in your browser. And John Anderson of DIYMedia.net is joining me here live in the studio. Here at beautiful WNUR in Evanston, Illinois, where the show now originates. And we're here to talk over the issues of the day in broadcasting and media. And the Yes Men, media pranksters.
Yeah, great people. They've been on your show.
They've been on the show. I should go look up which particular shows they've been. I've had them on when they pulled pranks in the past.
Mm-hmm.
They like to pull media poaxes. They like to do things such as I had them on when they went on BBC Business News in Europe as representatives of Dow Chemical to officially apologize for the Bhopal disaster, which is actually perpetrated by Union Carbide, which was then bought by Dow Chemical, and to announce that they're going to basically pay reparations to the people of Bhopal, who I think it was 100,000 people wiped out by Fajjin gas in the 1980s there. Have done other things, such as they showed up at a conference as a WTO to advocate slavery. The reinstitution of slavery in Africa, although what they called it was, they called it something like indentured workerhood or something
They also showed up at a Katrina disaster recovery conference as supposed representatives of HUD and told everyone that that was displaced, that they had immediate right of return and that the federal government was completely changing its policies on rebuilding New Orleans and was going to make it much more people-friendly. And that hit the wires and caused a huge fit and caused HUD to come out and go, no, sorry.
And that's part of it, is that they forced the hand of, say, Dow Chemical to have to admit that, one,
we're evil.
that the Bhopal disaster happened, and two, got distracted.
There's too many monitors.
Too many monitors in front of me. That happened, and then as well, they weren't going to pay up. They weren't really going to pay reparations. And thank you to Andrew, who's telling me information that are my Yes Men shows were on November 24th, 2004. July 15th, 2005, and May 12th, 2006.
Isn't it great to have a producer?
I know. Andrew Gotthelf, who's been ably filling the chair, helping me out, helping me figure out the much more grandiose WNUR studios here.
Producers never get enough props.
Yeah, so mad props to Andrew Gotthelf there at the controls, sending me the information I need.
Wow.
So you can go listen to the Yes Men talk about this. But on the 12th of November... they claim to have passed out 1.2 million copies of their own exact replica of the New York Times with a cover date of July 4th, 2009, with the headline, Iraq War Over. Full of other stories, bogus stories, of course, saying that the Afghanistan War is over and other stories. 1.2 million copies, though, they said. They handed out for free in the subways, looked real, had a lot of people fooled.
Did the New York Times officially respond to that?
The New York Times, it seems, has only responded on their City Room blog, which covered it as a story.
Right.
And did get a statement from a Times spokeswoman, Catherine J. Mathis, who said, this is obviously a fake issue, the Times. We are in the process of finding out more about it. So the gray lady seems to be keeping mum on the subject. But it's quite an outlay of effort to get all those volunteers together, never mind to publish 1.2 million copies of this.
Yeah, no kidding. How did they find it? Well, the nice thing about the Yes Men, as you know, because you've talked with them before, is at least one of them is a faculty member at a school and teaches a tactical media course on how to make media pranks. And I know that a lot of the funding they get for the projects they do not only come through close friends, associates, people that from around the world who just like their stuff, but also through program funding for being a professor, you know. And I wonder if they shunted any of that money from, what is it, Rensselaer Polytechnic or wherever they're at, to end up doing this. Because 1.2 million copies is not cheap to print.
Yes, it says things like, ex-secretary apologizes for WMD scare, 300,000 troops never face risk of instant obliteration, maximum wage law passes Congress, nationalize oil to fund climate change efforts, Labor Department launches job creation program, all public universities to be free. On the opinion page, the end of experts, the fog of peace, lobbyists are citizens too.
Wow.
And if you want to see this, it's copy left 2009, the New York Times company. Go to www.nytimes-se.com. And that's one of their trademark tactics, is they start by putting up a website.
That's very similar to the website
and looks legit. And to some extent, it's just a honeypot where they set it up and wait for someone to contact them as a spokesperson.
Yeah.
So they don't necessarily go out and try and talk their way into talk shows or talk their way into conferences so much as set up these very legit looking websites. Although, you know, if you're a keen reader, will
notice,
read between the lines about how what they're writing seems vaguely too good to be true, and wait to be invited. Mm-hmm. And so once you've been invited, well, you know, you've done nothing wrong,
right? Yeah.
And it's interesting that I think the reason that they did this particular prank is to make sure to sort of force the hand, I think, of our incoming new president administration. It's sort of the...
Have they given a statement as to why they did what they did?
I've seen no statement directly from the Yes Men. So, in fact, it all traces back to them, but there is no statement from the Yes Men as the Yes Men.
I think it's good they're sticking it to the New York Times, too.
Yes.
You know, in a way, because it was the New York Times that helped kind of get us into the war in the first place, right?
Yes. There is, yeah, indeed. There was a press release that went out on November 12th where it says, hundreds of independent writers, artists, and activists are claiming credit for an elaborate project 6 months in the making in which 1.2 million copies of a special edition of the New York Times were distributed in cities across the U.S. by thousands of volunteers. And so the people behind the project are involved in a diverse range of groups, including the Yes Men. Okay, so they did go ahead and come forward. The anti-advertising agency, Code Pink, United for Peace and Justice, Not an Alternative, May 1st, People Link, Improv Everywhere, Evil Twin, and Cultures of Resistance.
Where's the Independent in that list?
The Independent, which is the
New York City Independent Media Center's newspaper.
Yes. And we do say, it doesn't stop here. We gave Obama a mandate, but he'll need mandate after mandate after mandate to do what we elected him to do. He'll need a lot of support and, yes, a lot of pressure. And that's according to Andy Bicklebaum, another project organizer and editor of the paper, and he's definitely one of the
Yes Men. Right.
So pretty important stuff there, I think. I mean, it's funny. It's a hoax.
And, you know, the cool thing is, too, is if you wanted to, you could probably make your own copies of it now and still distribute it because it was dated July 4th, 2009.
And they put up a PDF. Yeah. So all you need to do is
get yourself
take it
some
to
newsprint.
Your, to a cop. Yeah, actually, take it to your local union printing press,
right?
If there is one, and have them print it up for you on newsprint and go.
Drop them around because not everyone else is up on the internets like we are.
Yeah, precisely. And maybe, you know, so maybe they hit the major cities, but maybe it's time to hit the smaller towns.
Oh, yeah.
Toledo.
That'd work out really well in Champaign-Urbana.
Moscow, Idaho would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Salida, California.
Mm-hmm.
Our friend Brad out there should be out there.
I recently talked with. He's doing very good. Props to Brad.
Yes, very well. So I think this is important, though. I mean, it's not. Some people may see it as trivialization. Some people see it trivializes these issues. But it's you want to get attention, and you want to get attention not just for being outrageous, but to refocus people. And I think, and by doing a little bit of media jamming or culture jamming, as it's been coined by the theorist Kelly Lawson, can serve a real purpose of making people remember. So, yes, we elected this man as our president, Barack Obama, and there are a lot of great hopes for him. But we realize that if we hope for him to fulfill these hopes, we're going to have to keep up pressure as people, as citizens, as residents of this country. All right, John, we've managed to kill the half hour here in just about no time.
I can't believe it. You know, all the other shows that I've done with you have been half-hour shows, with the exception of the inaugural show, which I did via Skype. And every time I do this, it doesn't feel like that, you know, even if it's 30 minutes or 60 minutes, it feels like it just goes...
No, exactly. But I very much appreciate you coming up here to
thanks
Chicago.
Thanks for having me, and thanks to Andrew for running everything so awesomely, and this is a great radio station you got here. You're very, very lucky to have it.
John Anderson, DIYmedia.net is your website. I know you're on a partial hiatus because it's that time of the semester, but you'll be
I'm
updating.
Grading papers like a mofo. hopefully by Thanksgiving or Christmas break, I'll be back into the swing of things.
And you'll update your FCC action
enforcement action database and all that stuff. Yeah.
So, and also a great archive of media collage, truthful translations, all at DIYmedia.net. And this has been Media Geek, weekly look at the world of grassroots independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. I will be back in one more week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, go to MediaGeek.net. where you can listen to the show. You can
where
find
hopefully
the Media
Paul
Geek blog.
Will start blogging soon again.
I
himself.
Have been this week. Go look.
Oh, okay, I got to check then.
You go check it out. Yeah, see if you checked it, you'd see.
hold your feet to the fire
I've been,
on that.
I've been back,
just been called
back on the stick.
All right.
As well, if you got any comments about the program, please do send them to me, Paul at MediaGeek.net.